John Twigg is on the line from Campbell River this morning. We're bringing John back on to talk to look at politics in British Columbia and beyond as we head into the summer season. His site, where you can subscribe to his newsletters, is bcpolitics.com. Please welcome once again to the commentary.ca, John Twigg. Good morning, Mr. Twigg.
Good morning, Joseph. Thank you very much for having me on again.
Thanks for being on. We wanted to have you on again before the actual election, but I was just so burned out by the vote, and so I'm interested because you follow politics regularly. Do you ever get to the point where you're just sick and tired of talking about elections and votes and politicians that you just need to get away from it all?
Yeah, after the election, there was a few days of downtime that I had, and I think most people had. It's just normal. After 4 weeks of intensive 24/7, you know, you got to have some downtime.
Electoral reform is something that a lot of people who email me, who visit the site, wanted to know about during the campaign. They were surprised with the result, pleased with it, disappointed that it didn't pass. Where are we at now with STV?
Well, I'm pleased to talk about that. I was one of the few people that wasn't surprised. I predicted it would get approval in 90% of their constituencies, and it got 77 to 79. I think that's pretty close to 90%. And I also hopefully predicted that it would get 60.1%, while as we know it got 58. So what are we going to do now? I think Premier Campbell is taking the advice that I wrote in a newsletter a while back. I don't know if he saw it. Maybe it's just coincidental. But that's to put a legislative committee to work on it. I don't think it's practical to get the whole Citizens Assembly back to rehash things. I don't think it would be wise to just retroactively rewrite the rules and say, oh, well, 58% is close, because, you know, that's a bad precedent. So what they'll do is, I'm guessing, because they haven't announced it formally, but Campbell has given various hints, such as at the cabinet swearing in. I think they'll appoint a legislative committee to go and review the ground and maybe get a wording for another referendum, perhaps with slightly different rules, piggybacked on the municipal elections, which is November 16. So if you put the House coming back in September and a committee going to work in October, you've got time to squeeze another referendum in on November, and I'd better check my calendar to make sure that 16th is right. Maybe it's the 15th, but November 16th is a Wednesday. That would, I think, cover it off. Maybe it won't go to 60%. Maybe they'll set the bar at 55, but it's certainly not going to be dropped. It came so close that people clearly want something done.
And both parties this time, the NDP and the Liberals, they'll support that?
Well, Carol James sort of trapped herself by suggesting that something should be done, but her solution is to impose mixed-member proportional representation, which I don't think is really I don't know if the system itself is that good, but sort of just imposing something that the voters didn't ask for is not good either. This was driven by public opinion, and that's one of the reasons why a lot of the experts didn't see it coming, of course, is that the experts tend to look at things in a peculiar way, whereas the populists sort of feel the movement, and that's what happened. We had a movement. There's a grassroots movement in BC that wants political reform and wants something other than the swing left-right two extreme parties.
Now, the solution that they'll be, do you think it'll be STV or will it be another system?
Oh, I think it will be a variant of STV. One of the problems with STV that we heard about in the election, such little we did hear, was the large rural ridings, or the large ridings, seven-member ridings covering all of southern Vancouver Island or something like that, or, all of Vancouver is one riding. I think people would prefer smaller constituencies, you know, like here on the North Island, it's already a very large riding, and population-wise, it used to be the largest in the province, though that's not the case anymore. But, you know, here we've kind of got a natural with Courtenay and Campbell River being two provincial ridings, one federal riding. Now, that would be a logical one to have two MLAs for. Now, STV will still work in a single-member riding. It's just not as much proportional, but it's still single transferable. So my recommendation is that we go with STV in single-member ridings, and then we have some areas like perhaps the North Shore or the North Vancouver. You know, Burnaby would be a good candidate for, you know, a couple of two- or three-member ridings. Surrey, same kind of a thing. You know, draw the boundaries where there's natural boundaries, and let the membership reflect that.
The Gordon Campbell announced his cabinet, I guess that was last week. Your thoughts on that? Were there good choices? Were there surprises? Were there bad choices?
Well, I was very pleasantly surprised, shockingly surprised it was so good. Some of the moves were brilliant. I particularly liked the one with Rich Coleman getting out of public safety and Solicitor General because his right-wing orientations were kind of out of step with public opinion. And
right.
Then putting him into forests, a lot of people are saying, well, what does he know about forests? Well, he does know a bit about forests, but he knows what he's getting into. There's good bureaucrats. And what we need there is somebody hard-nosed to bargain. You know, we've been negotiating softwood lumber trade for more than 4 years, and it's, you know, we still haven't got a settlement. Well, sending a tough guy out there for us is perhaps an improvement. Now, the previous guy, Mike DeYoung, was, you know, seen as a tough guy too, but he wasn't getting anything done. So maybe this change will be a good thing. And a number of the other changes, too. I got to squeeze this in here. I know we're not short on time, but very important, in the same breath, Minister of Aboriginal Relations and Reconciliation. Restoring a Ministry of Aboriginal Affairs, very significant. I think it's a positive move. And furthermore, they've got some kind of a document that they've agreed to move forward and reconcile relations, and that's very important too. So that's a good thing. And then the other appointments, Carol Taylor, finance, I got no problem with that. She's a rookie, but she knows where she's going. And most of the others too were very positive. The only negative to my mind was Stan Hagen still in cabinet. I don't think he should be in cabinet, but he's in Children and Families, and it's not a disaster, and life goes on.
Now, you mentioned Mike DeYoung. He moves from Forest to Labor and Government House Leader.
Yeah, that's another good one. The Government House Leader thing is, in a way, that's a sideline, and he won't be bad at that. But Labor, having a standalone Ministry of Labor and also a standalone Ministry of Environment, these are good moves. And even better was that there's now talking, this government, the Campbell Liberal government, is willing to have a dialogue with trade unions. And, you know, for the last 4 years, they treated them as enemies that weren't even worth talking to. And now, finally, they've figured out, I mean, this thing with Kevin Falcon and the dump truck drivers in the construction industry, you know, they sat down and they negotiated and they reached a solution that seems to be good for everybody. And hopefully they'll do this on a broader scale now.
Do you think some of these changes are cosmetic, that the tone of the government won't change?
That's, a lot of people are saying that. You know, Carol James, the NDP leader, is saying, well, you know, it looks fine. It's a smaller cabinet and there's some good moves, but wait to see the actions. And that's fair. Given the broken promises and the track record of the last 4 years by the Liberals, I agree. We have to kind of wait and see. But to my mind, the actions have already started. You know, we've had a flurry of Aboriginal Affairs items. Barry Penner, the Minister of Environment, is out there talking and doing things. You know, the cancellation of Duke Point, the natural gas power project on Vancouver Island near Nanaimo, that's a huge deal, $120 million cost. It's a good move. It would have locked us in for 25 years on high-priced gas. And that's not the best way to get electricity. So, I think they are going to deliver. And if they don't, of course, I'll be around and you'll be around and we'll tear a strip off them.
Well, let's move to the other side now. The NDP caucus is 33 members strong.
Strong?
Well, yeah, okay. Well, let's break it down. Do you think that there are strengths and weaknesses in that caucus?
Oh, very much, and more weaknesses than strengths. What they do have is a good mix of people that have been there, you know, ex-MLAs, and also bureaucrats like Adrian Dix and John Horgan. They're going to be far more formidable in the House now. There won't be any miscellaneous statutes bills going through without debate. They've got the staff now and the budgets and the personnel in the House to do line by line on everything, and that's a good thing. But what the NDP don't have is business people. Gregor Robertson is the only business person in there. Leonard Krogh, a lawyer, is portraying himself as kind of a pro-business person because he understands business a bit, but the business people will tell you he's been no friend of business in the past. It's not that he's an enemy either, it's just that, you know, he's not a champion. So the NDP caucus has got some blind spots, and also they've got some very strong biases. They're all left-lib, progressive, not that progressive is bad, but politically correct, feminists, gay rights, the usual NDP left-lib stuff. And, I guess that's, you know, if you're one of those people and you like that, that's good. But if you're taking the larger view of what's best for the province, well, we'll see.
And polarization, you think, will still exist?
Well, Carol James is trying to talk about a new approach, and she and Campbell are going to meet before the end of the month, supposedly, to work out some things so that, you know, they can, some of their mutual objectives can be met more quickly, stuff like that. That's good. But the opposition's job is to oppose, to be constructive, hopefully. We're still going to see lots of fireworks.
Now, Carol James's grasp of the leadership, that's an interesting subject, because it was leaked. Sean Holman's website said that November 25th to the 27th is that convention, the NDP convention in Vancouver. And is that the convention where they're supposedly going to re-examine this relationship between the NDP and organized labor?
I don't think they'll do it there. They'll probably set a new framework there for doing it in a committee. They're called the New Democratic Party, but they like to do things in secret. They'll probably have a backroom committee trying to restructure the arrangement with labor. Can the leopard change its spots? I don't know.
How do you think Carol James' grasp on the leadership is, though? Did you think that she did earn some political capital in this campaign?
Yeah, but frankly, I don't think she's really got the royal jelly. You know, remember Donald McDonald going after the Liberal leadership years ago? Maybe you're too young, but he dropped out. He said, no, I don't have the royal jelly. Well, I don't think Carol James has the royal jelly. She's a nice person. She's not mentally weak. She's fairly bright, but she doesn't sparkle. And we haven't seen her be tough. Perhaps she has been tough behind the scenes that we haven't seen, but I don't know. On the other hand, the NDP has a habit of not challenging their leaders, the Glenn Clark case being a notable exception, but generally the job will be hers until she gives it up.
What about the future of the smaller parties? During the campaign we heard a lot about DRBC,
yeah.
Even the Green Party. Where are they now?
That's a good question. The Green Party got less than 10%. They got, I think, 9-point-something, which means they won't be automatically in the leaders' debates in the 2009 election. So that's going to hurt them. But they'll be around. But I don't think they're going to be much of a force, unless, of course, they dump Adrian Carr, their leader, and you know, try and get serious about advancing their cause. The smaller parties, though, it really puzzled me. I was expecting them to do a lot better. Democratic Reform, I thought, would get, you know, about the same as the Green Party, maybe, but they got less than 1%. And the Marijuana Party, less than 1%. And all of the other parties. There were some very good fringe parties, you know, like I like the Refederation Party out in Nanaimo. They, you know, even in the ridings that they contested, I think there were six of them, you know, they were way down there. So I guess what it was a very polarized election. There was either people wanted to get the Campbell Liberals back and keep the NDP out, or people wanted to get rid of the Campbell Liberals and the only way was to vote NDP. So that's what happened in the election. It was a real polarization.
What am I to make of Jessica McDonald's appointment as head of the civil service? Is that a significant move? Is that something we should care about?
Oh, yes. Very significant, very surprising, and I was amongst those initially that were very skeptical because she's a fairly young person with not a lot of experience in the bureaucracy, and she was brought in, I think initially she was a constituency assistant to Gordon Hogue in Surrey. And she did well there, and she rocketed up the bureaucracy. She was given a post in the Ministry of Environment for a while, and then she went consulting, doing land claims negotiations. I gather working for the government to try and make arrangements with native groups. And she had some progress there, so they brought her back, and they stuck her in the Premier's office. Then when Ken Dobell left, Campbell liked her, and he made her his deputy minister, which means she's in charge of the whole public service out of the blue. And I was prepared to say, hey, that's crazy. But on the other hand, she's just delivered this new understanding with the three Aboriginal groups in the province, which looks like, we haven't seen it, and that's a problem, but it looks like the Campbell Liberals and the BC Native groups are on the way to a peace treaty. And if that happens, that's a major breakthrough. So we got to give her some credit for that. She was working on that, and it's her baby, and it looks like it's going to work. So that's you got to give her credit.
Let's move federally now. In the few moments we have left, Stephen Harper, he seemed to fumble a bit. The football thing last week notwithstanding, he had the government on its knees, and he managed to lose it by one vote. How do you think he'll do whenever that federal election will be, whenever that'll be?
Yeah, the way you phrased the question, how will he do in the next election, is in a way not the same as how is he doing now and why did he bungle things in the last little while. If an election was tomorrow, it's an academic question because we know it won't be.
Right.
He really blew it, to my mind, when they won the first non-confidence vote months ago now, and the Speaker didn't invite the Prime Minister to immediately call a confidence vote, and that was the point where the Conservatives, where Stephen Harper blew it, because if they'd stood up then and challenged the authority of the Chair, and said, no, we demand a confidence vote right now, they would have won it, and we would have had an election overlapping the provincial election. But for various reasons, and I think some BC interests were strong in this, saying, Stephen, no, we can't go now. We don't want to mess up the BC election. And so Harper sat down, and then, of course, Belinda Stronach crossed the floor, and they won the by-election in Labrador, and the Liberals did, and so now we don't have a crisis anymore. It's the Liberals with the NDP supporting them have enough to stay in power. So will the voters be mad at Stephen Harper for blowing it? Or will they be mad because of he supported Gurmont Graywall in that fandango? We'll see. Stephen's trying to remake his image as we speak. Well, it's not a good sign when you have to remake your image, but I guess if your image needs remaking, it's better to try than to deny it. So, I don't know. Well, I guess my answer, short answer, is it's too early to say.
How do you think it'll play out in BC, though, the Conservative Party support? We saw from 2004 to 2000, from 2000 to 2004, the support decline for the Conservatives.
Yeah.
How do you think it'll be this time around, or is it the NDP's time, sort of?
Well, my own gut and ears and things are that the Conservatives may be a fluctuated a bit in the past, but they're still rock solid. The NDP has come up, but I don't know that they've really broken out of their normal boundaries. You know, they're still politically correct, ultra-left stuff. The change may be Ujjal Dosanjh. I think he really damaged himself in the Grewal negotiations. Those quotes about har har, joke joke, you know, everybody gets rewarded if they're patient kind of a thing. That didn't look good on Ujjal, and I suspect that he'll have trouble getting reelected. And there'll probably be a couple of other liberals that'll have trouble getting reelected. And those seats will go Conservative. They won't go NDP.
Well, John, thanks so much for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Well, Joseph, I appreciate you phoning, and appreciate the interest of your website and all the people that look and listen to it.
Well, we'll have you on again sometime soon.
Good stuff.
John Twigg, subscribe to his newsletters from his website, bcpolitics.com. For the commentary, I'm Joseph Plenum.